Thanks for joining us this morning. Before I introduce our guests, we want to acknowledge our White Mountain Apache police officer, David Kellywood, who was senselessly shot and killed last Monday. Law Matters wants to extend our prayers and our thoughts to his family and his coworkers. In the studio this morning, we have Kim Challender, who is the Assistant Chief Deputy of the Pima County Recorder's Office. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Sherry.
And I'm going to let the lieutenant introduce himself. Nate?
Yes, good morning, Sherry. I'm Nathan Tingley. I'm a lieutenant in the United States Air Force, but I'm here representing myself and AFSEA, the Armed Forces Communications Electronics Association.
Okay, and Paul?
Yes, good morning, everybody. My name is Paul. I am a sergeant for the United States Air Force and also representing the same organization. Good morning to all the listeners and Sherry as well.
And the T in front of your sergeant means?
Technical sergeant.
Okay, and the organization we're referring to is the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association, of which I am a member, and so is Kim, and apparently you too. Okay, we've got a lot going on in the news regarding cybersecurity and what's going on with Russia. Can you address what you have, your information on this subject?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had some past adversarial compromises. It's been a hot button issue in the news recently. Since 2016, everyone's been looking at it, but most of the reports have indicated that Russia targeted systems in all 50 states, but the verification of the intrusions have been very limited. The verification within two counties in Florida were there, but they couldn't find any indication that they had actually tampered with the databases. So the biggest thing that they have accomplished by this is just decreasing faith in the system. They haven't actually shown that they have tampered with the votes themselves, but they have tampered with public opinion. They have influenced what's been going on within the campaigns. But I think that is their big win. So what we need to focus on is decreasing the amount of influence that they have by maintaining faith in the system. It's naturally something that Russia wants to target because we have a 10-to-1 GDP or raw GDP per capita, excuse me.
Okay, what does that mean?
So gross domestic product per capita.
Okay.
The U.S. produces 10 times the amount of GDP per person than Russia does. But when you adjust for purchasing power parity, PPP, GDP, we are 5-to-1. So we're a much richer nation. We have a lot more resources at our disposal. So cyber intrusions create the best bang for the buck, so to speak, for Russia to tamper with our systems. If they want to make us hurt, the easiest way to do it is to do it through cyberspace.
And screw with everybody's mind.
Absolutely, Sharon.
And that's what they're doing. That's yes. What they're doing.
The New York Times, Neil McFarquhar, excuse me, I think that's how it's pronounced. He published
an article.
You
might get bleeped if you say it again.
Yeah. Yeah, he published an article about the Internet Research Agency is what they called themselves. It turns out it was just a Russian troll factory, and they never did anything to meddle with actual election systems. They just developed hundreds of thousands of online personas, starting with just 12 people and growing to an organization of over 1,000. They all came in daily, developed thousands of social media profiles, and stirred the pot. They created their own groups. They went on to existing groups, and they made up fantastic stories about opposing political candidates. Additionally, they took an old fairy tale about the Dulles Doctrine, which was based on former CIA director Alan Dulles. He was the director from 53 to 61. A novelization about his policies came out in 71. It was called The Eternal Call, and Anatoly Ivanov developed this. They made it look like Alan Dulles was an extremist trying to destroy the USSR, but it was all taken from bits and pieces of doctrine in different places throughout U.S. history and then attributed to him, and then they added in a bunch of fairy tales to make it seem like it was something coming directly from the CIA. But the intent was to decrease the morals, the resources, and the ethical standing of the members of the USSR. And they had all of the people coming into this troll factory absorb the Dulles Doctrine, write articles about it, figure out what it was, and then revert that principle upon the U.S. They started trying to deteriorate away the ethics, the morality.
Well, they did a good job at that part.
They did. They were very successful. But a lot of the people at the Troll Factory took issue with it. Several of them met with Neil from the New York Times, and they decided that it was morally wrong, and they left. But that was only a few out of the thousand trolls that were developing these online personas. And it looks like even though they found that one, there are several other troll factories throughout Russia, and they're continuing to do the same work within this election cycle.
Yeah, they were very successful in 2016.
Yes, they were.
And 3 million people will probably agree with that.
Mm-hmm. What was fascinating about what Nate talked about in terms of the social media advantages that Russia has is the fact that it's not attacking personally systems, voting systems, election systems. It's more of the human component.
The mindset.
So if you're talking about trying to persuade political views, and especially if it's triggering divisive issues, we're talking about race, gender, gun control. And these are really emotionally triggered political issues that these cyber actors from Russia could actually take advantage of.
And they're doing a good job of it. Yep. How does the Pima County Recorder's Office deal with this type of invasion? Are you concerned that they're going to get to the actual voting booths?
The physical
machines.
Well, we're talking about cybersecurity, or we're talking about social media right now.
Yes.
Is what we're focusing on. And I can tell you right now, we're working with the Secretary of State. We have a campaign right now. It's hashtag Trusted Source 2020.
Nice.
And that's exactly what we're trying to do, is make sure. Because in 2016, the Clean Elections had a focus groups, and we were behind the curtain there, listening to what the voters that didn't vote, the reasons they didn't vote. And a lot of it was the confusion. That's exactly what these trollers are trying to do, is create confusion and then keep people from voting. And that's exactly what they saw happen. So
yeah, only 56% of the country voted. That's pathetic.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. So, at Pima County, we were at, it was almost 80%.
Voting?
Yeah. So we did
in the last election or the presidential election?
Actually, both. Yeah.
That's pretty 70%,
wow, that's impressive. I think, in 18, and then in 16, it was almost 80%. Yeah, it was a pretty high turnout. But still, those voters that were confused didn't
vote. And I know some of them. Oh, yeah. I don't know what to do. I'm not going to vote.
It's hard to be behind that wall. Yeah, behind that window
curtain,
and the curtain, and say, oh,
yeah.
You know, what can we do? So that's what we're working with the Secretary of State. We're really pushing a lot of social media out there, Facebook, Twitter, saying, give us a call, you know. And
well, it's when I was growing up, things would happen, and my parents would always say, consider the source before you react. Don't have a knee-jerk reaction. Consider the source. And I think that's something that's kind of gone to the wayside. People aren't considering the source of this information.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you get your news on Facebook, I feel sorry for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to all the news stations. You don't just focus on one, and, you know, they're the be-all and end-all of everything, because that's not the way it works.
But I think information overload is exactly what the issue can be. And then they just don't know what source to consider, because there's polar opposites out there.
There's so much.
Yeah.
Okay, that you were saying that the Secretary of State has a source of information that's credible.
Well, that's what we're there's a lot of organizations but we're partnering with them for with one message. One message is call us and ask us, you know, not who to vote for, obviously, but yeah, exactly. But
out if something is real.
Right.
Okay. Is there a website they
because
go to?
Because even one of the things that was out there was you could vote the day after the election. You know, there was some on Facebook saying, oh, don't bother voting today, vote tomorrow. You know, things like that are completely false.
Yeah,
those
it'd be
things
really
we can,
special to believe that one.
Well, But it's out there, you
it
know?
Is out there, and people are gullible. People are going to believe it. And before we go any further, I want to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, thanks for staying with us in the studio. We have Nate, Paul, and Kim, and we are talking about cybersecurity and our elections. And Kim, tell us about what the recorder's office is actually doing to help secure what's going on with this election.
So we're constantly monitoring, obviously, all activities going on, but we're also, we worked with the Department of Homeland Security a few months ago and had a physical assessment. So it's not just about cybersecurity. It's also making sure that our building is secure, that our server rooms are secure, that all the ballot processing areas are secure, that the accesses are where what they need to be as far as
yeah, you security. Can't just walk in and take a tour.
Right, right. So we had that assessment along with the Department of Elections. Then we had an external and internal penetration testing, which penetration testing, they come in and they, being the Department of Homeland Security, comes in and tries to break the system. And then they give us reports as to what might be...
Did they do it?
Huh? No, they did not. But they give you a report of what you can do better and how you can improve. And so that's what we've been doing. And another big part of cybersecurity and breaches, usually it can come from the employees and internally. So we're training the employees as far as phishing scams go, any sort of phishing scams, which are email scams that are out there. So we're doing a lot of training also to make sure that our staff is prepared.
What kind of resources do you use before you hire the staff? Do you do in-depth background checks on them, or how does that work?
Pima County has started a background check program. Yes.
Okay.
A lot of our intermittent employees that we receive or that we get are actually former Pima County employees. We hire about 150 for elections. So, but
just because you need the extra staff. I used to work the elections. Yeah. I was an election judge. It can get a little crazy.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah. Okay. Paul, tell me about the resources people can use to be their own fact checks. I mean, you can listen all day long to the different, you know, Fox News and CNN News and all these things. How do you fact check these people?
So when you fact check people in terms of the information being released, one of my biggest recommendations is looking for websites that end in .gov and any other government-related websites to fact check your information. If it's not coming from them, there are websites that you could go to and look for the URL or the website that you're going to, see how safe it is, and then go to the website and look at the credibility of the person that are releasing specific reports. So for instance, if there's a report about cybersecurity, what they can do is the writer will be mentioned on that article, and you could click on the article's writer's biography and see what their credentials are.
And see if they're just a Russian troll or if they're a New York Times reporter or whatever.
And in some cases, Cheryl, let's be honest here, in terms of trying to validate information, especially online, it's very hard to validate the trustworthiness of that information and the sources where it's coming from, unless it's been trusted by other people. So within your community, let's say from your political community, you know the people that you can trust, the people that reports critical information that you can rely on from an online perspective. And it's the same with cybersecurity. So the people that have been known, former advisors for President Obama, or they were cybersecurity advisors for specific countries, then you kind of see where the credibility comes in terms of the information and where it's coming from.
Okay. Is there, you said websites that end in .gov.
Yes.
Are there any other fact-checking websites that can be used?
So from a fact-checking perspective, I don't know from the top of my head, but the website you can go to ensure the safetiness, at least, from a cybersecurity perspective, because there's websites out there you might go, and if you go to that website, you will download a malicious application, and then your system is infected. So there are websites like McAfee, Norton, Symantec. These are few websites I can use to not really fact check, but the safetiness of the website.
Okay, Norton or these companies, antivirus, will they filter out some of the bad type of?
So their responsibility is to give you a rating of these websites. If you have, for instance, if you have McAfee antivirus installed on your computer, there is also a separate application that does help you find trusted websites.
Okay.
And they will give you a warning. So if, let's say, for instance, if I go to the internet and I go to, and I have McAfee installed on my computer.
Okay.
They have some sort of like McAfee internet security that will trigger a message on your computer saying that your website, the website that you're visiting, might be malicious.
Oh, so it gives you a warning.
Yeah, it gives you a warning. So it gives you actually a decision to make. And in most cases as well, they actually block those websites as well for you not to go to. And they'll completely cut the connection right off the bat.
Okay, I was told, this was years ago, I don't know if it still applies or if it ever applied. I was told if you have more than one security system on your computer, they fight against each other?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
Explain that. Because I know people who have McAfee and Norton and some other company, and I'm like, why did you do that? And maybe I was wrong, so why does it fight against each other?
So for example, if you're talking about Windows, like your operating system,
okay.
What happens is they fight per se in terms of, I will be the one providing defense on your system.
Okay.
So for instance, if you have a Windows native antivirus on your system, which comes with all Windows operating systems, and you have, let's say, McAfee, like my previous example, in some cases, what will happen is Windows might ask you, do you want to disable our operating system to allow the other, do you want to disable our antivirus to allow the other antivirus to run on your system, and vice versa. So it's more of a prioritization of what system do you want to primarily use for your defense. And Nate might be able to piggyback on this, but in terms of having one system on top of the other, yes, they'll be fighting resources, but if you look at the other side of the house from a security perspective, one antivirus might not catch the other. So you're balancing between resources on your system versus depending on the defenses that you currently have on your system.
Yeah, I think Paul actually hit it on the head there. It's just competing for resources, because used to that was the case. But with these newer operating systems, newer antiviruses, they will absolutely decide which one based on your input. They'll ask you, you will decide which one will be the primary antivirus, and then the other one will be disabled.
Okay.
And I think we need to focus. You can't focus on one thing. It's multifaceted. So training the people, making sure your employees are well informed, also having a good antivirus system, and then also we work with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, Secretary of State, National Guard, all the counties. We're working together and to form a coalition to make sure that if there's anything out there, we're sharing that information. And we also work with an organization called ISAC.
And
they bring in, or we get daily white papers telling us what's going on and alerts and the latest threats that are out there. Real time, for the most part. It's pretty close to real time information. So
you're on top of it.
We're trying, yes.
One of the things that you said, the user awareness piece is huge, because I'm glad that you mentioned that. A thing for our voters to pay attention to not become infected and be worried about that, is, like you said earlier, spear phishing or the social engineering where they send you emails. If you hover over a hyperlink within an email,
yes.
And it shows a different link in the bottom left corner of your page or of your your Outlook, whatever email platform you're using, that is most likely a malicious link that is going to redirect you and create a backdoor into your device and give someone access to your system.
Absolutely.
And Sherry, I want to piggyback on both sides of this issue. There was an article that I came across from Senator Oregon, of Senator of Oregon, Wyden, and he mentioned about the relationship between federal government and the state government in terms of protecting political systems. He had a great analogy, and he mentioned that, would you expect a local sheriff to protect against Russian missiles and other military capabilities? So you wouldn't not rely on a local IT employee to protect from your Russian cyber army, meaning that we have to work together from a federal perspective down to the state local perspective to understand the threat is out there and we need to work together. But if it's like a nation state actor, federal should be in the forefront of this effort.
And education to civilians, the rest of us, to understand and to look, be able to have the wherewithal to look for what we're, you know, being exposed to and not be that gullible to believe some of the things that are going on in some of the stories. You were talking about a Russian YouTube.
Yeah, so the channel .rt is the domain, Russian television. They have an extremely large number of videos available on YouTube. They're one of the most followed channels out there, and people don't even realize that the .rt means Russian television. It's developed by Moscow. I mean, they're the ones pushing out all of the stuff, and it has just enough truth to it that it seems realistic, but they're just slanting it just enough to create divisive rhetoric out there.
I notice there's a lot of divisive rhetoric out there.
Yeah.
It's just...
seems like it's the thing to do these days is just share it.
I know. If don't you don't check, agree share. With somebody, you verbally attack them instead of, you know, being an adult and say, I agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And move on your merry way. Mm-hmm. So what kind of things are on this Russian, what kind of videos are you talking about?
So there are some out there talking about conspiracy theories about the U.S. Spreading discord throughout the world to weaken other countries and allow us to increase our empirical control over the world. There's some stuff showing Donald Trump as basically a superhero and the things he's been doing around the world to increase his stance, and that has been shared by Russian trolls across to the conservative side. And then there's other ones showing Donald Trump as a villain, and that's been shared across the left wing. So they create content for literally everyone across the spectrum, and they share it within the niches of people that want to see that content just to inflame the divisiveness.
So do we have a YouTube website that does the same thing for them? Wondering if, you know, tit for tat.
Not that I'm aware of. I think that we, as a whole, try to maintain the moral high ground. I know sometimes people like to push the button of the things that we've done in the past, specifically a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I think that we try to maintain the moral high ground these days and try to fight, you know, equitably.
Most people try to maintain the high ground, and hopefully we'll get enough information out there that people think twice before they start believing all this rhetoric that's going on. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, thanks for staying with us. If you have any questions, the number is 790-2040, and our guests are Kim, Paul, and Nate, and we're talking cybersecurity. And Kim, you were just talking about some more things that the Pima County Recorder's Office is doing. Tell our audience what you were talking about.
Well, the U.S. government deemed the elections as part of the critical infrastructure a couple years ago. So we are getting grant monies to help protect the system, our systems. So that's another way of creating a more secure system, you know, updating all of the equipment. And so
if somebody votes for one person, that vote doesn't go to a different person because it's been generated that way. They're not trying to infiltrate our actual voting machines. They're trying to infiltrate our minds.
Probably more. I mean, more of that than anything. Yeah. Because, the integrity of the system, of our systems, is there.
Right.
So it's easier to, I think, change people's minds than it is. In fact, the Department of Elections, they're actually air-gapped. So, which means their tabulation systems are completely off any sort of internet or anything. There, it's a separate server in a room
for security reasons.
For security reasons, so there's protection there, and then of course we're protecting the voter data and the database.
Okay.
Itself.
Nate?
Yeah, so an air-gapped system is a really, really great defense against someone attempting to infiltrate it. The resource investment to be able to get into an air-gapped network would be higher than a competitor like a Russia would be wanting to spend to compromise a specific small election, local election, something to that effect, especially if they don't get long-term gains out of it. So they, as I mentioned earlier, they have a lot lower GDP per capita and lower purchasing power parity by a ratio of 5-1 to the U.S. So they're looking for low-cost gains on an international scale.
All that low-hanging fruit.
Exactly. They're looking for the low-hanging fruit. And if you make something difficult for them to infiltrate by air-gapping it, and you're not giving them a full presidential election out of it or even a whole state, it makes it very, very hard for them to decide to infiltrate that. They're going to go after what Sherry said. The mines try and make people lose faith in the democratic institution itself.
Absolutely. During the last election, there was somebody, I don't know what political party they belong to, but there was somebody on the news who said mail-in ballots are iffy because it says on the outside of the ballot whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. And they said if they don't like your party affiliation, they'll just throw your votes away.
Well, that didn't happen. Yeah, that's yeah, a lot of conspiracy there. Mm-hmm. But that's something that the city of Tucson, they handled their own election. That was not part of Pima County. Pima County does not have the political affiliation on the front where you can read it. So
you can just read it.
It's not distinct. Yeah. It's,
well, plus the fact that with your election, you can follow your vote going through
all
the system
through.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. make sure that it was spent counted. So.
Yeah, the minute we scan, the minute that affidavit is scanned, you can follow all the way through.
So, yeah. And if you don't trust the U.S. mail, then drop it off at the office. There's
Absolutely.
Plenty of places where you can drop it off.
We're in the middle of an election right now. Well, we started.
The ballots just went out, didn't they?
They did for early voting for the presidential preference election.
Nice.
Yes.
I prefer all of them. Is that allowed? Not allowed? Okay. All right. I want to talk about what you were referring to. I guess the painters are here. We're going to get painted. Okay. Talk fast. I want to talk about what you were referring to with securing your different pieces of equipment. And what can you use? Let me narrow it down. If I'm on my phone, is a phone easier to infiltrate than a PC?
Yes. The reason why I say this, Sherry, because mobile phones have more applications per se. And that's number one. The number of applications that are on a mobile phone. Well, let me take that back.
No, in you terms can't of, now. It's
okay. No, in terms of the applications on your mobile phone, phone are more critical, I would say.
Okay.
So, for instance, if I use a banking app, I directly have one click to my banking application. Not like, for example, my desktop, it takes me two clicks if I save the credentials and I go to the bank itself. In comparison with mobile phone, there's a lot of human interaction because it just takes one click, one touch. That's one factor. So human factor is a huge attack surface for a lot of the current cybersecurity efforts that hackers are trying to do. So mobile phone, in my opinion, is more susceptible to cybersecurity attacks.
I know a lot of people that do banking on their phone. I don't, because mm-hmm. I'm just like, this doesn't seem like a reasonable thing to do. You know. So do you do banking on your phone?
I do not do banking on my phone. But I think, Sherry, what we should do from a mobile phone perspective is let listeners understand what are the mobile cyber threats out there, right? So for instance, one of the threats that I came across was about a malicious software, which in the cyber intel community call it Pegasus, and it targets both Android and iPhones. So basically what it would do is a spear phishing email will be sent. That may email, a text message, or via social media. The person sees that link, clicks on it. So when somebody clicks on a link that they're not known for, they click on it and it actually runs malware or malicious software on the background of that mobile phone. And what happens is, once that malicious software is running on your background, they can grab text messages, password credentials for your banking, any other information that's on your phone. And in some cases, they can actually activate cameras and record you as you're holding your phone. Without you knowing. So this is, I guess, from a user awareness perspective, we have put a different spin on how we educate our people, and especially with our listeners, is the fact to understand the threat rather than understanding what you can do on your phone from me. We have to set it this way. We have to enable this. But if you understand the threat, at least you know how to handle the more sophisticated hackers out there.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and the other thing we need to look at is this. It's called the Internet of Things, right?
Yep.
IoT.
True.
It's not just about mobile phones. It's also about your Ring system. I just got an alert that, you know, with the Rings, there's a security, easy to breach security there. There's now your refrigerators can tell you what's going on and can be connected. So you really have to pay attention to, holistically, everything, every device that can connect.
Yeah, to piggyback what Kim was talking about, Sherry, right, in terms of the Ring, and it's like a camera, internal camera inside your house. There was not too long ago, if somebody saw the news about somebody hacking into the
Ring.
Watching
Rings, the little girl.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That should be an eye-opener for all of our listeners.
So what type of malware do you have for a telephone?
So basically, if the type of malware is more depending on a lot of factors. One is, what type of phone am I trying to hack into? So it may be an Android phone.
Are you one of those people that hacks into people's phones?
I love reading about it. I do testing on the side, but it's for the purpose of educating people on how it works. And if Correct. You give them that education, they'll be more cognizant if it's happening to their mobile phones or not, and IoT things in general.
Paul, I don't want to be a wet blanket here and tell everyone that they can't find out what kind of taco they are or which Disney princess they are, but those are the perfect surfaces for people to get roped into those kinds of malware attacks. Facebook, they unfortunately can't vet every single ad that comes through because how many ads push through their organization. They try to, but most social media platforms are unwitting to the fact that they are pushing out an absolute ton of malware through those little quizzes and games and stuff that are shared throughout their platform.
So there is really no, like, Norton type of program that you can put on your telephone?
There is, but if you willingly click and decide to say, yes, I want to go to this site, and that's only if you configure it to stop you when you make bad decisions. And I say bad decisions like it's really your fault, but people don't know. So
yeah, you don't know.
Unwittingly, you click on something. If you don't have your antivirus configured to prompt you whenever you go to a cross site, like if you move from site to site, mm-hmm. and it says, are you sure you want to go to this site? That is it checking you. If you don't configure it to do that, you're going to do it automatically, and it just automatically downloads the malware. So you need to configure your antivirus on your phone to make you second guess your decisions.
But at least you know what princess you are.
Yes, exactly. Also, I'm a chalupa.
So with your server, like I use Verizon, would Verizon have a recommendation for what to use, or is it, you know, up to you?
So For mobile devices, for these mobile providers, Sherry, they do have recommended antiviruses, and some of them actually come with it. So I would recommend for like the normal user, it's good to have an antivirus. And the reason why I say this is because this will help minimize, you know, those random malware or viruses that might come into your computer. So it's a good first step it's a good first line of defense. And I do believe that mobile providers do have recommendations.
What do you use, Paul?
I do use McAfee.
And on your cell phone?
I do use McAfee on my cell phone. The reason why I do this is because I use it based on what McAfee releases on their reports from an intelligence perspective. So if I know that company is credible enough to characterize my threats to my phone, then that tells me that you're a great company to go to in terms of antivirus from your mobile phone.
So McAfee's probably one of the best options out there if you have the resources for it. I use Lookout because it's lower resource intensive. And if you don't have as much RAM or as much processing power on your phone, I think it's a better option for people with not the next gen phones.
Now, are these programs specifically created for telephones, or are they the same programs you put on your computer?
Separate programs.
Separate programs. Okay, we have a question from Kathy. Kathy, what's on your mind?
Hi, Sherry. It's your friend Kathy.
Hi.
I have a Mac, and I've always been told with the Mac that you didn't need an antivirus, that it was better just to go with what Apple had. And so I kind of like to know what you have to say about that.
Okay, Paul.
Yes, Sherry. Kathy, good morning. To answer your question, that is not correct. The reason I say this, 2 months ago, the former cybersecurity advisor for President Obama came out with a statistical report that Mac users are being more targeted for the first time ever in terms of cyber attacks. Now, I'm not saying Mac is not reliable in terms of their defensive posture. They are. They have a lot of default security measures that are implemented by default on your system. So if I'm going to answer your question, you still need antivirus on your system.
Okay, if you have a phone like hers, which program would you recommend?
Oh, so to be honest with you, now I heard from Nate in terms of the recommendation, I would recommend Lookout. The reason why I say this is because two of the reports that I keep on reading came from Lookout. So Lookout will be a good mobile phone antivirus to put on your system. Plus, it's less on your resources.
It doesn't wear down you.
Yes.
So what do you think, Kathy?
Oh, is this for my computer or my phone?
Your phone.
Well, my question was about the antivirus on my Mac computer.
Oh.
So Sherry, Kathy, I did address your Mac. So your Mac, when you talked about your Mac, your actual computer, that was the same answer I had. You need to still have an antivirus on your Mac.
Which one do you recommend?
McAfee.
Yeah, I would do, like I mentioned, I would recommend McAfee as well.
Is McAfee specifically for a Mac computer?
No, McAfee is an antivirus company. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Do they have a version specifically for Mac?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Uh-huh.
So most of the antiviruses that are out there that are pretty known, like McAfee, Norton, Symantec, are cross-platform. So you can use it on any computer or any mobile device.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, thank you very much.
No problem. Okay. And Kathy, one more thing. To be honest here, in terms of the better security, if you want more security in terms of your computer, you need to pay for it, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know McAfee. Is it McAfee that has a free download? Will protect here?
Yeah, so most of them, they do have a free download, but it doesn't come with the other bells and whistles. Of course, it's their business model.
So you get what you pay for.
Yes, ma'am.
Exactly.
And still best practices, you know, just be aware of anything that you're opening up and any hyperlinks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing.
True.
Because the antivirus can't protect you from everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's true.
Okay.
Super. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Okay, thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Paul, Nathan, and Kim. And we're old friends now, so we don't have to get into the formalities. Okay, Kim, I wanted you to tell our audience how they can get credible information if they're worried about the recorder's office. And you know what? A little bit about what the recorder's office does. It's not just voting.
Right. We really have there's three different parts to the recorder's office. We record land transactions. So if you buy or sell a home, you don't get your keys, you don't get your check until we've recorded your documents. So an important part of our organization. Now, that is a separate from the voting area. So we're voter registration. We take care of all the voter registration rolls. And then we also take care of early voting. So that's what started right now. We mailed out about 173,000 ballots on Wednesday. So if you're, this is a presidential preference election, so it's, and the only party participating is the Democratic Party.
I wish somebody would have had the intestinal fortitude to step up, because I would have registered as a Republican. You know, you can change your registration. If you're an independent, you have to decide. I would have changed it to Republican to choose. I would have done that.
Oh, but the Republicans and the Republican Party and Green Party and the Libertarian Party all chose not to participate in this election. So it's just the Democrats that are...
That are raising Cain.
Well, that are giving
how many
Democrats
people are on the ballot?
There's a total, you know, we had printing ballots and all that. There's a process to that. And on, I think it was December 9th was when the Secretary of State drew the names, the order of the candidates. Mm-hmm. And there were 18 at that point in time. Now, we've had people withdraw.
Right.
And we've had people suspend their campaigns. So you can actually get that.
So what's the difference between withdraw and suspend?
Withdraw, you're completely out. Suspend, there's a chance you could come back if you want. So okay. that's the difference. So, and you can get that information as to, we actually have them, if you come and vote early, we have that list available at any of our early voting sites. But you can also look on, it's Pima County Elections website, and it's like the third bullet point down, it tells you who's withdrawn.
The
and they're updating that. Yeah, they're updating that list. So, because if you vote for someone who has withdrawn, because it is on your ballot, if you vote for somebody who has withdrawn or has been suspended, you can't...
You threw away your vote.
Well, yeah, and you can't vote again. Don't ever vote twice. How's that? That's...
I'm from Chicago.
Yeah. Don't do it. Okay. We'll catch you. We have accountabilities in place.
I know. It's so much better now. It used to be. I never did it, I swear.
So we were talking about a trusted source.
Yes.
So it's hashtag trusted source, or I'm sorry, trusted info 2020 is what the Secretary of State and the campaign were running. And
so say that again.
It's hashtag trusted info 2020.
Okay.
And then Recorder's website is recorder.pima.gov.
Okay.
And azsos.gov.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. And then our phone number, the Recorder's office phone number, is 520-724-4330.
And ask for Chris.
Any of our staff can help. And if they don't have the answer, they will find out. The answer for you.
Okay. Okay. Paul, this is our last few minutes.
Okay.
What do you want to say to help the people? We've got 7 minutes.
So I would say, Sherry, in terms of what we talked about, the fact-checking of websites. So there's a difference between understanding what credible information are the websites have versus how safety visiting the website is. So in terms of fact-checking the website, I want to reiterate, go to your .gov websites at the very end. So if you www.nsa.gov, and then start with your major news and channel outlets that you know, and then whatever they trust, you could start from there. That's from an information credibility standpoint. Now, when we talk about the safetiness, I hope Nate and Kim will be able to piggyback, is when you look at the websites that you're visiting, there's specific indications you want to look at. In some cases, when you access a website, there's a warning that will tell you this connection is not secure. So that will raise a flag. Do I really want to go that route?
Okay, I've had that happen where, you know, hey, do you trust this person?
Exactly. So you want to second guess. From a technicality standpoint, they're doing something in the background for validation purposes. But it's not always not secure, but it's a good starting point to say, do I really want to visit this website? Is it really risk? Am I really accepting the risk to go there and something might happen after the fact?
And that something could be?
It could be something, a malicious website might have an application out there, and then that malicious application will go to your computer, and then everything goes to hell at that point.
So you could do an entire segment on certificate trust relationships, yes. And it would probably push your listeners over the edge trying to wrap their heads around it. Huh? But the short of what Paul was talking about is true. If you were not intending to go to that website specifically and you trust it beforehand without the certificate trust relationship, if it tells you that that is not a trusted certificate, do not go to that website. Unless it is something you need to access, you know the website and the URL are correct, and that they just don't have a certificate trust relationship. For instance, within the DoD, there are a lot of certificate trust relationships that don't exist that need to exist, but it's because we're working on things, and sometimes our systems aren't always as interoperable as they should be. We know that those websites are the accurate one that we're trying to get to. We still accept that, and you can go to that website because you know it, and you can trust that it is the same URL that you're trying to access. It's still HTTPS. It's not someone trying to redirect you to another website to have something malicious occur. So unless you specifically indicate all of those things and it's trusted, do not go to an untrusted website.
So if you're, I know that some companies can be, their websites or their web page can be cloned, so to speak.
Yes.
Yes.
So how do you confirm, okay, this is not some pretend person, this is the real thing?
That URL that I was talking about, the website, the name HTTP, if there's no S and there's supposed to be an S, that could be a clone. If there is a www3 dot whatever, it's a different subdomain that's been created and fabricated and put in place. So you're going to a malicious site, or if they've just misspelled one word in the tail of the domain or something within the subdomain.
Or they put a backslash or...
Yes.
So there's so much to learn.
It's very tricky.
Oh my God.
They're very tricky. They're slick.
Yep. And I think, Sherry, the overall lesson for those listeners out there, I think the biggest takeaway is user awareness, is to understand the weakest link in all these compromises and all these breaches is coming from the user. There are statistics out there that 95% of all initial compromises in companies and different systems is caused by humans.
Absolutely.
So, okay. How do you... I've had emails from work. They'll say, this is going on, this is a phishing thing, don't click on it or open it. How do you, if you don't get that email from work, how do you prepare yourself for something? How do you look at it and know it's a phishing thing before you click on it?
So that's a great question. So when you, for example, you see that email, let's say on your mobile phone, from the do you recognize where it's coming from? Also, when you look at specific indicators, does this subject, is it English literate? Meaning some of these phishing attempts come from foreign countries. So the non-native English speakers directly translate the phishing messages. So if you think the English is not proper, doesn't have the right syntax, then you might question of where that's coming from. Also, when it comes to attachments, so keep in mind that you have to be aware before you receive that email, are you in that situation? What do I mean by that? Is, for instance, some phishing attempts might come with USPS tracking systems or tracking confirmations. So you have to be cognizant enough from the back of your hand, understand, did I order something for the past 7 days?
Yeah.
So situational awareness of where you're at in terms of when you receive that email and understanding why you received that in the first place.
I got an email from, hey, you want to track what you ordered? And I thought, I didn't order anything.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Also, certificates again.
Yep, certificates.
So Gmail, Outlook, Hotmail, all of the primary email providers have certificates associated with your email address. If you're receiving something from one of those domains' email providers and it's not a signed email, there's the potential that someone is attempting to fish you.
And I left it, my cousin, he has a Paul Bunyan server. And I'm like, you know, Paul Bunyan, okay. I want to thank all of you for being here on time. And
well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
exactly. I appreciate it.
I've learned a lot today. This is awesome. And I want to remind everybody that next week we will have Jonathan Mosher on, and he's Pima County attorney, one of them, the chief criminal deputy, I think they call him. And he's going to talk to us about his plans for the future. And until next week, I want everybody to shop local and stay safe.